Part 1, Chapter 3, Gateway. One difference between winners and losers is how they handle losing. Even for the best companies and most accomplished professionals, long track records of success are punctuated by slips, slides, and mini turnarounds. Even the team that wins the game might make mistakes and lag behind for part of it. That's why the ability to recover quickly is so important. Troubles are ubiquitous. Surprises can fall from the sky like volcanic ash and appear to change everything. That's why one prominent scholar said, "Anything can look like a failure in the middle." Thus, a key factor in high achievement is bouncing back from the low points. Exercise 1. Paying attention to one thing necessarily comes at the expense of another. Letting your eyes get too taken in by all of the scientific equipment in the laboratory prevents you from noticing anything of significance about the man in that same room. We cannot allocate our attention to multiple things at once and expect it to function at the same level as it would were we to focus on just one activity. Two tasks cannot possibly be in the attentional focus at the same time. One will inevitably end up being the focus, and the other, or others, more like irrelevant noise, something to be filtered out. Or worse still, none will have the focus and all will be, although slightly clearer, noise, but degrees of noise all the same. Exercise 2. Building the body's cells with raw foods naturally protects us from bacterial infections and viruses of every kind. It strengthens the cells in ways that only raw foods can because the human body, as well as all life on Earth, has been conditioned to receive its nutrients in that way for billions of years. However, highly processed foods first appeared in the 1930s. The rise of chronic disease of all kinds correlates precisely with the increased consumption of processed foods. Cancer is a perfect example of this. It has continued its sudden rise since the 1930s, and now one of every three people in the United States will get cancer in their lifetime. Switch to a raw food diet, and disease will disappear from your life for good, or for as long as you remain a raw foodist. Exercise 3. Formal appraisals are a very important part of the overall communications an employee receives concerning job performance. However, if feedback is received only once during the year, it will fall short of meeting its ultimate objective. For an employee to receive feedback that can truly help him or her improve performance, it must be provided on a regular and more frequent basis. If there are areas of improvement to be addressed, they should not be saved up until the time of the annual appraisal before being communicated to the employee. Similarly, feedback about an individual's good job performance should also be communicated and reinforced on a frequent and regular basis. Set up quarterly discussions, for example, or be careful to do them as projects come to an end or at other appropriate times. Exercise 4. In 1879, Thomas Edison announced that he would publicly display the electric light bulb by December 31st, even though all his experiments had, to that point, failed. He threw his knapsack over the brick wall, the numerous challenges that he still faced. And on the last day of that year, there was light. In 1962, when John F. Kennedy declared to the world that the United States was going to land a man on the moon by the end of the decade, some of the metals necessary for the journey had not yet been invented, and the technology required for completing the journey was not available. But he threw his and NASA's knapsack over the brick wall. Though making a verbal commitment, no matter how bold and how inspiring, does not ensure that we reach our destination, it does enhance the likelihood of success. Exercise 5. Imagine encountering a piece of fruit that seems to be a lemon. It has the right shape, the right smell, the right color, and the right texture. It's a lemon, you think. But then we paint it with red nail polish. We coat it with ammonia, and we squash it flat. Is it still a lemon? Of course it is. It's just a lemon that has been abused. But note that it is no longer similar in any obvious ways to other members of the category. What makes it a lemon is a narrative we construct about how it started and how it came to be the way it is now. Or consider a fake $20 bill that you have just seen come off your friend's color laser printer. It's a perfect copy to your eyes of a real $20. It looks right, it feels right, it even smells right. So is it a $20 bill? Of course not. It's a fake $20 bill. Exercise 6. Nicholas Humphrey suggests that color preferences arise because of the different signals that colors convey to organisms in nature. He argues that colors can send approach signals, such as the colors of flowers that attract pollinating bees, or avoid signals, such as the colors of poisonous toads that warn off potential predators. The underlying idea is that because colors carry information about which kinds of objects an organism should or should not interact with, it would be of benefit if the organism liked the colors that send approach signals and disliked the ones that send avoid signals, as these aesthetic experiences will lead the organism to behave adaptively. The bottom line is that the relevance of color-related information for the organism's health and well-being makes it beneficial for the organism to behave in accord with such color preferences. Exercise 7. Mass political opinion can be sort of like guessing the number of marbles in a glass jar. Most people's guesses will miss the mark, but the average guess of a large enough crowd is generally very accurate. The idea that the masses generally come up with good overall decisions is sometimes referred to as the wisdom of crowds, and it really does work amazingly well for some things. The problem is that, in politics, we don't see the glass jar for ourselves. We view it through the lens of the media, and the media show us a distorted view of politics. Thus, we should be aware of such media biases in order to minimize the likelihood that they'll throw off our political judgment, even though there's no way to permanently fix them. Exercise 8. If you plant a seed in the ground and water it every day, it starts to grow towards the surface. If you don't know and trust that this seed is growing, you will doubt whether anything at all is happening underneath the surface. You may start to say, "I don't believe in this. I water this piece of ground every day, but I never see any results for all my hard work." Part of life is trusting that if you put in the effort, the outcome is already happening with your very intention and then your action. Eventually, one day, that little plant breaks through the soil with its green new stem. And from there, you watch it grow stronger and more vital every day, as long as you keep looking after it and watering it. Exercise 9. When we talk about global warming, we seem obsessed with regulating just one parameter, namely carbon dioxide. But while reducing the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere may be a part of the solution, surely our primary concern ought to be to advance human and environmental well-being the most, where many other factors are in play. While cutting carbon dioxide will save some people from dying of heat, it will at the same time cause more people to die from cold. This highlights how reducing carbon dioxide means blindly eliminating both negative and positive effects of global warming. We ought at least to consider adaptive strategies that would allow us to hold on to the positive effects of climate change while reducing or eliminating its damages. Exercise 10. Some tennis players believe that the first chance of serving is for trial and invariably use the second chance. The result is that they make a mistake with both serves quite often. Once you have faltered in serving, there is no question of playing further. At times, they commit a double fault at such a crucial stage of the game that it becomes suicidal. The lesson to be learned is that, first of all, one should avoid committing mistakes in life, and the opportunity should be grabbed in the first instance itself. If a mistake has been committed, however, it should not be repeated because life does not give you many chances. If you miss all your chances, you lose the game of life. Therefore, one has to be watchful in order to make use of the opportunities offered by life. In no case should any opportunity be lost in the hope that more opportunities will come. Exercise 11. Stabilizing our climate would help resolve what many scientists consider to be the gravest environmental danger humankind has ever faced. Each of us has a part to play in shifting our culture toward a way of life that respects the natural world. The choices we make and the way we live can play roles in turning the tide. By eating in a way that is suitable both for our own health and for the health of the biosphere, we can help our society to face and to overcome the enormous environmental challenges of our times. The more people move toward plant-based food choices, the greater the possibility that our species will not only survive, but will thrive. A cultural shift toward a plant-based diet would be a step toward environmental sanity. It would be an act of love for all generations yet to come. Exercise 12. Buildings are everywhere, large and small, ugly and beautiful, ambitious and dumb. We walk among them and live inside them, but are largely passive residents in cities of towers, houses, open spaces, and shops we had no hand in creating. But we are their best audience. Architecture critics can praise and pick on new designs, but their readership has lately been too limited. We talk about homes as investments, building sites as opportunities, unsold condos as an economic disaster. But all that kind of chatter avoids the physical reality of projects built and unbuilt. Rather than just talking about money, we should also be talking about height and bulk, style and sustainability, openness of architecture and of process. Design is not the icing on the cake, but what makes architecture out of buildings? What turns them into places where we want to live and eat and shop? Instead of less talk, what we need are more critics, citizen critics, equipped with the desire and the vocabulary to remake the city.